What would you say
you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Mrs. B.
She's a sixth grade teacher. A chicken is trying to children. By using humiliation. The title always seemed to be Johnny. He's a bit slower than the other. He was quite young, his mother. Died at the kitchen table. Wants something on some food, the fashion. Uncle Dave was pushing at Levi's. Johnny decided to make some. But he didn't know the rhythm. So we came to school to read. Reached and steal the plasma. This day began to chastise. She made him feel like an asshole. Goofy small.
Hey, welcome back to As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and with me, as usual, not all the time, but usually, my partner in crime, Steven. Say hi to everybody, Steve.
Hello.
How we doing over there?
I'm okay, I guess. How are you?
I'm having a weird day.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. For everybody who's listening, today is Friday, August 7th. It is my 40th birthday. I'm 40 today. Very funny. And I can't think of a better way to usher in a 40th birthday than kidney stones. Yeah. Guess where I was last night? I was in the ER here in Bethlehem. I was having dinner with my family. My boy and girl twins are turning 13 the day before on August 6th.
Which is an unlucky number, by the way. Just want to point that out. Anyway.
Yeah, well, hey, let me solidify that unlucky number thing. We all decided to go out to eat. You know, kids got plans and they want to hang with their friends and everything. And I was like, when I come home from work, we're all going to go to dinner. Let's all go out together. And I came home, grabbed a shower, and things started going wrong from there. And I wound up spending my kid's 13th birthday in the ER.
Mm. Yeah. That is literally my worst, and I'm not exaggerating. I literally worry about this like all the time.
Kidney stones?
Kidney stones, because I know it's one of the most painful. I was told today, a guy at work told me, there's a statistic, it is the male equivalent of a woman giving birth to a watermelon.
That is what the woman told me in the hospital last night. And it turns out that my kidney stone was slightly less than 1 millimeter in size. And they're equating that to a woman squeezing out a 9-pound baby, which I got a hard time believing. I still think women probably got the short end of the stick when it came to that. But I can't, I'm still, my mind, I can't wrap my head around the fact that there's something about the size of a half of a grain of sand in my kidney that caused such problems. If you'd have told me that there was somebody behind me stabbing me in the kidney with a steak knife, I would have believed you. It was so bad. It's the worst pain I've ever felt in my life.
So that's where the pain was in your back.
Well, okay, all right, I'll give you the whole story. It's going to get gory. If you don't like hearing about, if you don't like hearing weird stories about penises, you better fast forward for a little while.
Well, I love weird stories about penises.
Who doesn't, right? So I'm sitting at dinner in the restaurant, and I'm getting this weird pressure. I can't describe it in any other way, but I felt like the tip of my penis was being pinched. Like pressure, not pinch, not stabbing pain, just something wrong, something weird going on.
When you said your penis was getting pinched, I was getting excited. Sorry.
Right. Well,
So it's a bad
it's a bad pinch. Right. So I would get this urge to go to the bathroom. I go in and 6 drops come out, and I'm like, well, this something wrong, man.
Did it hurt that you tried?
No, didn't hurt. Just very strange. The urge to urinate was like front loaded up into my Johnson, right? There's the Lebowski reference. We get that out of the way early.
Get off the love.
So as soon as I was done, as I'm walking away, like wash your hands, take 4 steps away from the bathroom, the sensation is back. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, I just went, do an about face, walk back in, 2 drops come out. I'm like, what? It's starting to look a little darker. So I thought, all right, I was out sweating my ass off today working and everything. Maybe I'm dehydrated, you know? I happened to have a day where I was really, really, really outside working hard. I was carrying like a spray tank on my back to spray like a whole piece of property. And I was drinking a lot of water. I was probably more hydrated yesterday than normal, actually. So I'm standing there thinking about all this. And I have the urge and I can't go. Something going on. Go back, sit down, have 2 bites of chicken. Get up, walk back to the bathroom. Something's going on. So then I go down. I look down, and it's getting darker. Like, it's starting to really – there's definitely a discoloration, but I can't tell what's going on. Then I have to go again, and I go back a 4th time, and now it's literally, like, pink drops. Like a little tiny – like, light food coloring. And I was like, okay, all right, tap out. Something's wrong. So I go back to the table, and I'm like, I don't mean to alarm anyone, but there's something going on with me. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I just don't feel right. What do you mean? What's going on? And I'm like, we'll talk about it. And I was like, I finally just told her, and she was like, oh my, where do we go? And I was like, well, emergency room's like next door. It's up the street. So, she took me to the ER. Finally get in, the triage nurse is asking me, hey, where's your pain on a scale of 1 to 10? And I was like, to be honest with you, 0. I don't have any pain. I have weird pressure up in the tip. It feels uncomfortable. Nothing hurts. It's just pressure. And I keep constantly having the urge to pee. And I don't understand why it's not coming out. And so then back and forth, going to the bathroom, little bit of red, couple drops. And then one time that I go, I actually get a little bit of a stream that comes out. Little bit. I'm talking like not much, but more than drops. So something shifted, something moved.
Oh man.
And the pain started. And she asked me, do you have any flank pain? And I said, no. What's flank pain? She said, on your sides. And she grabbed, she like stuck her hands like where Forrest Gump puts his hands, you know, like all the way back on the kidneys. And I said, no, I don't feel anything there, you know? And then it started on the right side. I started to feel pressure, started to feel more pressure. Then the pressure turned into like, it felt like a grown man had his knee on my back. And I was like, this is getting bad. And then it started to stab. It started to get worse and worse. It started to grind. It started to move. It actually felt like someone was twisting something in me. I was short on breath. I was walking back and forth. I must have looked like a meth head walking around the ER. I couldn't get comfortable. And finally, they took me back. They finally got the room clean. And I was writhing in pain. I mean, I would hate to see myself on video, because you probably would have been like, come on, man, it can't be that bad. I was writhing in pain. I was trying not to groan, because I thought if I start letting go and start making noise, it's just going to get louder and louder. So I was like gritting, bearing down on my teeth, and just it hurt so bad. And
I'm like squeamishly like in my seat right now, like the hair on my neck is
back and forth, and the whole time back and forth to the bathroom, couple red drops, a little bit of a stream, can't get nothing going. They hooked me up to an IV. They gave me a whole cocktail of pain medication, which was awesome. And also an anti-inflammatory, which is supposed to be good for breaking the stones down. So once they put me on that, they within a half an hour, we had Dr. Phil on, and I was like, hey, look how bald he is. And I'm reading the drawers. I'm like, phlebotomy. That's a cool word. I was high as a kite. Within a half hour, I was like, kidney stones. Sound fun. I was out of
Were you, once they gave you the drugs, was it basically like tolerable? Like, okay, I can handle this now?
Or yeah, it just felt, yeah, absolutely went away.
So they can medicate you through the passing of these stones.
Oh my God. Yeah. They doped me up, man. She doped me up so much. She gave me something immediate, which she actually put in with a syringe, like into the, they tapped my arm and then they attached that. They screw that on. And then she like pumped it in, certain, you know, however many milliliters at a time. And I like 10 seconds later, I was like, my eyes felt like, whoa, like I just instantly felt whatever she did. Then they hooked me up to an IV bag, which had a constant drip of painkiller and the antibiotic. It was some sort of cocktail of two or three different things.
Wow.
And then it went away. It was just gone. Pain went away. At that point, could have been a steak knife in my back. I wouldn't have cared.
Did you pass the stone?
No. Here's what I think is going on. The pain that you feel as it's leaving the kidney is where all that back kidney pain comes from. With that, that's the worst pain I've ever felt in my life, blah 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 blah. Once it gets through that mess, I guess the hose connecting the kidney to the rest of the urinary tract is just too small. It doesn't accommodate stones, right? The stone pushing its way through there is what's causing your kidney to spasm. Which part of the spasm is the body's natural reaction to think it has to go to the bathroom, which is why you constantly have this urge to go. It's so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You try to go and you can't. And here it's because you don't have to go. It's like your kidney playing tricks on your mind because it's spasming. It's doing, you know, it triggers that whole ding, ding, hey, time to go to the bathroom. But this is like ding, 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 like the whole time, you know, and I was just going nuts. I didn't know what to do. Now I think the stone has moved into my bladder, and this little teeny tiny half of a grain of sand pain in the ass has to work its way out, and I think I'm going to have to pass it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I gotta pee this thing out. It ain't going to feel good. And I'm still waiting for it to happen. So
now, is that going to be worse or equal to the pain of it?
I think,
at what point do you get free? You're just like, all right, it's going to come out, and it's not going to be an issue anymore.
Once it's out, I'm done. I'm in the clear because I did get a CAT scan, and that's the only stone that I had. I'm not stone guy. I don't have a kidney full of them. I got this stupid little thing that got through the filter. Yeah, but I still feel the urge to go. I just don't have the pain that I did. I'm currently sitting here on Percocet right now because. Once this thing, you know, when I go to pass it, I'm not going to want to feel it. It's going to hurt because it's going to be.
Yeah, like you got to definitely keep yourself.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how it's been.
Oh, man. Well.
So I got out of work. I was supposed to work today. And here I'm texting my boss, and he's making fun of me. He's like, good luck, you know. But he's cool. We're fine. So I got out. I mean, if you're going to call out sick on your birthday, boy.
It's like, boy, you're really going elaborate with these stories.
Yeah,
why didn't you just ask me?
Could have made it up.
So you want to sit home and eat cake and drink beer. Okay, I get it.
Exactly. So yeah, I had a hell of a day, and I'm still having one. And yeah, it's my birthday, and I'm laying around on Percocet. So I mean, it could be worse.
Well, I too am on pain medication.
Nice.
Not nearly as much as you probably, and nowhere. Huh. A severe. Well, I don't want to downplay my own situation, but it's a different situation, and it's definitely a serious and prolonged situation. But I have tendonitis and carpal tunnel in my arms, and it's reaching a almost debilitating level where I am having trouble picking up even something as small as my fork, you know, to eat dinner, or like my cell phone. It's because it's not really about the weight of your what you're lifting. It's about the position of your arms and the movement. So like opening a door with a doorknob can be excruciating, even though it's nothing, you know. So so but of course doing strenuous work, which I do, and certainly lifting a gallon of paint even is brutal.
Right.
So I got an EMG and they said I have to sleep with braces on to fix the hands. The hands don't bend very well and there's tons of pain in my fingers and numbness and all that stuff. But the worst is the tendonitis. And unfortunately for me, they said the only thing to do is to basically stop working. So my hope is diminished and I have to take medication to get through. I missed my medication for a day. I ran out on a Sunday night, and so I went to work, you know, whatever, the next day or whatever. And it was so bad. I was like, I had to pick stuff up and put it like under my arm, you know, like instead of using my arm, my hand, I had to like I was carrying a gallon of paint and I had to basically put it under my arm and hold it against me.
Jesus.
With my arm. I just couldn't deal with it. And I came home and I felt like I was hit by a car. Like just everything hurt so bad. And it moved up my shoulders and so I'm dealing with that. And you know, the only thing you can do is to rest them and ice them or put heat on them, or you know, they say you can shoot it up with cortisone shots. I don't want to do that crap, you know. I'm on pain medication just so I can function, just so I can move my arms.
Couple of dope fiends. Man, this podcast.
I know. This has become a depressing.
Yeah, this has been the most depressing intro.
Yes,
I hope you can stitch that all together and make it sound funny.
Well, you know, what can I say, man? You hit a milestone. You're 40.
I see what you did there. That's funny.
So
yeah, well, that's good. As soon as you get a grip on your problems, I guess we can get back to focusing on new music purchases.
Yeah. I actually got some vinyl. Big shock.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm slowing down.
Would you get to carry them out of the store for you?
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, that would have been a good idea. So
what'd you get?
So after all that Sepultura talk, I decided I need to find the Roots album on vinyl, and I did, and I found it very cheap on Amazon through their used and new, you know, non-prime stuff or whatever. So I found it,
right.
Found a copy, brand new. It's a 2x LP. It's got 2 LPs. It's a reissue, so it's nice and heavy, and it's it was in Germany.
Are you holding a cough drop?
No, I'm holding it in my hand. I'm looking at it as I'm...
Good. Get it a little closer to the mic. It sounds great. Bad enough I'm bedridden and I have to do this with my iPhone microphone. Jeez.
You probably don't even realize you're doing this right now. So, yeah, I got it on vinyl, and it was $20 shipped from Germany, which is cheap considering where it was coming from. And it sounds great. Because it's on two records, it, you know, they spread the songs out.
Spread it out, yeah.
High quality. It's on black, heavy black vinyl, so it's
wide neck.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then the only other thing I got is the new Primus album. I got the
no way
Primus and the Chocolate Factory with the Fungi ensemble, or however you say that.
Yeah.
And
on vinyl.
It's on chocolate brown vinyl.
Of course it is.
It's there. Their twisted reimagining of the 1971 classic Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They're very...
How is it?
I like it. I actually really enjoy it. It's, you know, obviously...
Damn cough drop, would you?
It's just the plastic. I'm reading the back of it for you.
Good
to have an Oompa Loompa song.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see.
Into your imagination. So Primus, and this is the original, or not the original, but the lineup that we care about, the lineup that recorded Pork Soda and Caesar Cheese and all that. They went in the studio, decided to do a sort of a their own take on the soundtrack of the original movie. So what you get is like a very, it's Primus, but it's not Primus rocking out. It's Primus doing more, they're using like unconventional instruments, especially the drums. The drums are basically percussive, like completely weird things he's just hitting, and they kind of, it's more, Les Claypool said that it was kind of a, it was heavily like, influenced by like the Peter Gabriel, the early Peter Gabriel stuff. That's kind of more, artsy fartsy, not as poppy as, you know, he did later. And then, The Residents, which is, I'm a fan of the band, The Residents, and Les Claypool is clearly a fan of The Residents. They like, they're all over Primus's sound. Mm-hmm. And Primus even covered them on the Miscellaneous 3 EP.
Oh, that's right. Okay, all right.
That's this. What song did they do? Sinister Exaggerator, I think it's called. That's a Resident song. Mm. So it has that kind of a sound. It's very strange. It's very cool. Trippy and weird. Yeah, but because it's Primus, and you know, I'd say it's like Primus when they get extremely out there, you know. So it's cool. It's not, you know, I'd prefer if they would go in there and do like another Pork Soda type, you know, just sort of bring that classic sound back.
I didn't love Green Naugahyde, their newest
full. Yeah, length, so. I tried to listen to it the other day, and it's really not good.
Yeah, so I mean, you might as well go off on a weird tangent and do a Willy Wonka album. Yeah. Because yeah, I hate to say this. Am I allowed to say this out loud? Is the heyday of Primus gone? You know what I mean?
I hope not.
They could. I mean, I went to see them in 2003. Me and Seth W. and his ex-wife went down to see them, and they played Caesar Cheese in its entirety. They did like six or seven songs, and they broke the set, and they came back and played Caesar Cheese front to back, everything. And then ended, and then came back and did an encore of like one or two songs. I forget what it was.
Like a 1 hour version of like Tommy the Cat.
I think they jammed on Southbound Pack of them for like 14 minutes or something. Whatever. Yeah,
they do that all the time.
But they I know, and I love it. And they could totally make a career on just, we'll just do Frizzle Fry, and we'll do the Caesar Cheese, and we'll do Pork Soda. You know what I mean? But their new stuff, I just feel like they jam out a couple of the songs anyway, and then they just go back and play all the stuff we know. So,
yeah.
Is it over? Ah, that's a bummer.
There's a couple of really good songs on the Green, however you say it. How do you say that word?
Naugahyde.
Naugahyde? Yeah, you said it really the first time. Yeah, there's a couple of good songs on it, but I have a hard time with the production, which takes away from the fact that it's not very good songwriting either. Mm. And I don't know, some of their better songs on it sound too similar to other songs they've done already. Like, one of the singles on that was, what the heck was it? Tragedies a Comin'.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds exactly like Bodacious or whatever that one song is called.
Okay.
The one is like, who's going to ride Bodacious? You know, whatever from, Antipop.
Right.
They're like the same song. And it's kind of it's so much so that when I'm singing along to, you know, the new stuff, my brain keeps wanting to go to the old Bodacious song.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But I've been listening a lot to them, and I've been listening a lot to Pork Soda and Tales from the Punch Bowl, which I think is totally underrated.
Me too.
And from a production and songwriting standpoint, I think it's one of their best sounding albums. And I just missed that. I missed that era. I missed the sound of his bass. It was a different. He had different effects and a different amp setup, and it just sounds a lot heavier and bigger sounding. Mm-hmm. I just wish they'd get back to, you know, the three of those guys just writing great, like, you know, just clean without tons of pedals and effects, and, you know, just play some songs again. But yeah, I mean, whatever. The new album's fun, and it got it for like $11. So nice. Yeah. But that's all for me. I'm enjoying that Mutoid, man.
Yeah, you should.
It's a great. I don't have it on vinyl or anything, but I'm enjoying it for sure.
I in part of my purchases, I got I won a $100 gift card from my job, so I decided to blow it all on vinyl.
Are you serious? That happens?
Like a responsible 40-year-old? Yeah.
Man.
And yeah, and I was gonna buy my Hum ticket with it, you know, so I didn't have to pay for the concert ticket. I couldn't get the thing to work online. There was a problem with it, so I went and ordered the ticket and paid for it out of my own pocket, and then called the company and figured out, oh, okay, there's something wrong with the card. I have to activate this and that, whatever. Nobody bothered explaining that to me. So I spent it on a bunch of stuff around here, stuff for the house and everything, but I also grabbed a handful of vinyl. And one of the things that I bought, yeah, I'll trickle it out as I get. I'm not going to buy anything else for a while now, but as I got stuff, I bought the new Sumac album. Sumac.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Sumac put out something called The Deal. But I did not buy it on vinyl. I bought my first CD in, like, forever.
Really?
I remember the last time I bought a CD. I'll tell you why, Steven.
There's got to be a good reason for this.
Because it's double vinyl, it's $27, and there's no digital download.
Well, I mean, there's ways to get the digital download.
And I said, yeah, I know. But I said, yeah, I said, you know what? Nah. I don't want to do that this time. Sumac, dude, there's six songs. There's six songs.
Six songs on a double LP?
Exactly. It sounded like it might be a little bit of an annoying record to listen to.
They have very slow burn type of jams.
Exactly. Yeah, they got some long stuff.
They're good jams. They're just long jams.
So I decided to pick it up. I got it on CD. It comes in a little gatefold and everything. It's cool. Hey, whatever.
It has its place.
Dude, Aaron Turner, the dude from ISIS. The bass player is Brian Cook. He was in Botch and These Arms Are Snakes. And then Nick Yakishin, whatever. The drummer from Baptist.
That was a terrible guess.
I don't know. He's Canadian. He's got three Y's in his last name. You kidding me?
I thought you said he had three wives.
He might. He's that cool. Who knows? But no, the vowel Y, the letter Y, second to last. He's got three of them in his last name. Who does?
That's wild. That's unheard of.
Unheard of. Unacceptable.
He should change his professional name.
Yeah.
Stage name.
Nick Smith. We're gonna call him Nick Smith, the drummer from Baptist, and then he also played on the new Armed album, which is friggin' great.
Oh, okay, yeah, I dig both of those.
Yeah, he's in this band. This is like another super group, kind of like Mutoid Man. It's like a lower level stuff we listen to super group. You know what
I mean? Isn't Lung Teachers a super group?
Well, I mean, no, because no one knows who Josh is, and you're not that good. So I don't have to be a super.
But he was in My Brother the Woodmaker. Isn't that like a super group thing?
That's true. Who are you talking to now? Now I have to explain who My Brother the Woodmaker is. We'll do that another time.
Or you could just leave it. Let it be a mystery.
Okay. So you're
buying CDs in 2015. That's cool.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, what the hell? I bought a cassette last year. Thanks, Sterilizer.
Yeah, actually, that's a good cassette, though.
Brandon Duncan. I know, right? That's something great to have on cassette.
I'll confess something here while we're. I actually bought a CD myself in 2015.
True confessions.
I am guilty of doing the same thing.
You just made fun of me for buying a CD.
How much did you pay for that CD?
$10. I think $10 even.
Okay. I'm setting myself up for disaster here because I spent $35 on a CD this year.
You better. The next sentence is going to make or break this conversation.
You're not going to care. This is a band called the Revolutionary Army of the Infant Jesus. And their box set, it's their entire discography. Was there so rare? It's a rare band. It's a rare. Their albums are extremely out of print. And there was this hand printed, or I don't even know if it's handmade or whatever, but it looks handmade. It's like a strange box set with their three albums, The Gift of Tears, Mirror, and A Rumor of Angels. And they're like an 80s kind of neo-folk, gothy type, whatever you want to call that stuff. Just real, like, sort of, you know, I think neo-folk explains her sound pretty well. And it's just the kind of stuff I'm really into. And I discovered them from Scott Hatch and Bert Toast. Mm. They reissued, I think it was The Gift of Tears on vinyl. And I checked that out, got into that. And I wanted more of their stuff, but they're extremely hard to find. And
what are they called again?
The Revolutionary Army of the Infant Jesus.
Okay.
And it's just like really intense, like folky kind of music. And it's like, it's kind of reminding me of Woven Hand lyrically a little bit.
Okay.
But it's really rad. And like I said, it's extremely hard to find. This box set has everything included, and this is out of print as well. And Scott Hatch had like a small handful left. And so I snagged it, and I'm like one of a few people that own it. And it's a CD, but it's the only way to have their music, and I'm happy to support it. So,
well, that was a very long story. So, did you have anything else about what we're talking to about today? You didn't get a chance to talk to Shelby with me.
Yeah, we're talking to Shelby. Well, you're talking to Shelby. Again missed another great interview. So, yeah, I got to see Frotis one time. Back in 97, I want to say. I could be wrong about the date. It's hard to remember. But I saw them at a really disgusting venue in Philadelphia called the Stalag 13. Anyone knows about 90s punk, hardcore, metal shows in dingy alleyways of Philadelphia, they'll know that venue. And
Stalag 13. I always pronounce it Stalag.
Stalag, whatever. It could be, it's probably Stalag. I don't know. But anyway, they had a dirty, like crummy, gross mattress, like against the wall in the place. It was like that kind of a venue. And we went down there. I think Rick was with me. I'm trying to remember who all. But we went down there and they played, and it was real small. It was like playing in someone's bedroom. Like it was like one of those types of shows. And, you know, we're all crammed in there watching them, and they're really loud and crazy and just totally rocking out. And all I remember was this homeless guy comes wandering in, and
I like it already.
And in between their songs, he comes walking up to the mic, and he's like, yo, let me do one of my raps. And yes. Shelby walks.
Yes, please.
Well, it was, I think, you know, Frotis, they're one of those bands that are like, okay, we're going to let this happen at our show, like, because it's just going to be funny. So he comes up on the stage, and he starts rapping, and he's just, like, freestyle rapping the Brady Bunch theme song. And they're just standing there, like, the band's just standing there, like, kind of waiting for him to shut up. But they're being really gracious about it, and they're kind of just sort of laughing along, he's like, here's the story of a man named Brady.
Nailed it.
And we're like standing there like laughing, like, what is going on? And then the band just decides they're going to start playing their next song. So they start playing, and they go in this really fast, heavy song. And the guy's like, hold up. He still has the mic. Hold up. I'm not done. Hold up. And they're just like, and it's, you know, he's trying to rap over these guys rocking out. And then next thing I know, more homeless people coming in, and someone starts lighting off firework crackers in the building. So all at once, you got the spastic Frotis thing happening. You've got homeless people trying to rap, and you've got explosions going on all around you in this tiny little bedroom-sized scumbag, dirty venue. And I remember just being like, this is what it's about, going to these shows.
I don't like the combination of fireworks and a mattress on the floor. That sounds like you got a Rhode Island.
It was totally a Rhode Island. It was like a Great White concert. And it was like I remember just feeling like, I feel like I may get killed tonight. You know, like I just remember feeling like so unsafe. You know, you're in this scummy part of Philly in this gross place. Firecrackers are going off. They're behind me, so I don't know if like eventually one of them is going to go off in my face. And I'm trying to watch the show, but I'm paranoid about that. And then you got these homeless people kind of invading the show, and it just the whole thing together was just insane. So that's my Frotis memory. And
I don't have one. I've never seen them before. I've just heard them.
Yeah.
And
they're an awesome band.
Hugely influential band. And
a lot of people like them.
Yeah, interesting. I actually I think I told Shelby this. I didn't realize they weren't on Discord until I talked to them today.
Yeah.
Or the day that I talked to them.
Oh, really? You thought they were on Discord?
I just assume anybody who's a decent band and comes from D.C. passed through Discord, right?
Well, they very well.
And I like the way that he explained it. He was kind of like, you know, Ian is very pro D.C., but it isn't just automatic. You know what I mean? Like, it's about taking care of his people that he knows, taking care of the scene, helping out when he can.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff in here about Ian MacKay too, where he was like, you know, when he loaned people money, he wrote it down on a piece of paper that was scotch taped to his desk. Excuse me. And when that band paid the money back, he scratched the name off. There wasn't any contract. There wasn't any like percentage of interest and blah, blah, blah. It was just like, I want to help you out. Here's X
He's
amount
a
of dollars.
Simple man with simple business. Yeah.
Yeah. He really sounds like he would be a decent guy to, know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So you got to talk to Shelby. That's cool. And I'm assuming that we're going to hear about all his current adventures.
Yeah, man. It's a great story. Definitely bonded with him. It's pretty lighthearted, pretty funny up front. And then we actually get a little dark. We start talking about some serious big boy stuff.
I talked to him a little bit on Facebook, of course, but I don't, you know, we don't have like an in-person friendship or anything.
He's a good dude.
He seems really kind and
moving home soon too. So
yeah, let's talk to Shelby Cinca.
Happen to be talking to a very special guest who was really hard to book because of a major time difference. We have Shelby Cinca from the band from Frotis, if y'all remember Frotis. Shelby, how the hell are you?
I'm good. I'm sitting here holding some crossbows and catapults, Vikings.
Such a weird conversation we had before we got started. I was all like, Shelby, you and I are like, we're like enemies when it comes to what we're into, because I like some of the old 1600. I'd rather be into that stuff, crossbows and catapults, and you're more into the sci-fi. And he was like, oh my god, I can't believe you said that. So yeah, somehow I mentioned crossbows and catapults and he had the toy within arm's distance. Weirdest thing ever. Very strange.
Which I found yesterday, and I was wondering, what is this toy?
And now you didn't...
I did a Google image search, and I matched the Vikings that I have here, and I matched a little bullet, so...
You didn't know what the purpose was, and now it all came together. It's synchronicity, baby. You gotta love that.
Yeah, I like that.
So, Shelby, why is there a 6-hour time difference between you and me? I am on the East Coast of the United States, and you are
currently in Sweden.
The hell are you doing in Sweden?
I got a Swedish wife, lad.
Nice. Okay. So, all right. I understand.
Yeah.
I got a Pennsylvania wife, so I was able to just stay like within a half hour where I grew up. So that worked out.
Yeah.
Swedish wife. How'd you meet her?
Yeah. I met her over here. The band, you know, when Frotis actually toured a bunch in Sweden.
Okay.
In 98, we toured 5 weeks in Sweden alone, which is like no one does. That's like touring 5 weeks in Florida or something. So like we hit like all these little villages and I wouldn't say villages, just really small towns.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I guess the hardcore scene in the 90s got pretty big here.
Right.
And I think, you know, basically, you know, Refuse and all the bands kind of being inspired by American hardcore and certain U.S. bands coming here first kind of paved the way.
Mm-hmm.
And just people getting turned on to DIY and like all that. It just, everyone was hungry for it. So there was like little scenes in every town. So in the press, you know, there's no like in national press in Sweden, a small country, will hit everyone. So, you know, the press started writing about it, I think. And people just created their little scenes for that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, similar to America, but a lot more compacted since it's a smaller country. So yeah, we toured here for 5 weeks and no one does that anymore. Like probably been in more places than people that lived here. So because of that, made a bunch of friends here and the dudes in Division of Laura Lee and visited them after Frodo's broke up and hung out a bunch and then met the wife and the rest is history. And then I go into an Irish accent.
Yeah, that was weird.
It just feels right though, you know what I mean? It's like, the rest is history.
I
old Dingle. Met the wife in Dingle, had a Guinness. Like, terrible accent.
I love it, Shelby. Always have, always will. That's funny. Yeah, I don't know why you broke into that accent, but whatever. You're overseas and we're a bunch of ignorant Americans, so we'll buy it. It's fine. Whatever. Yeah, you're over there now. Well, that's cool. Yeah, you were kind of a pain in the ass to book because you work second shift and you were telling me you do a user
experience designer, keeping my clients from America all here. So
America.
We're heading back in America.
You are?
So. Yeah.
Like to visit or to move back here?
Live.
Oh, are you really? Where are you going to move? Back to DC?
Back to Cali. We were there before, so.
Cali, okay.
Yeah,
the weather's nicer there, so I've heard.
Yeah, and like the pretty, I think Los Angeles, where we were living before, is, you know, has like the whole tech scene, but not as intense as San Francisco. A little more laid back. Not as Borg, if you will.
LA is LA, yeah, wow, you went super.
I mean, LA has like Hollywood Borg, but like tech Borg is slightly less than San Francisco.
Gotcha. So
it's more chill.
Okay, all right.
Creative, so I dig it.
Right spot to be for the what you do for a living, right?
For what I do.
For what you do. Okay, well, I'm going to put a link up to the Frodus Wikipedia page in the show notes of the podcast because, man, there's so much to go over. We don't have to go over every nook and cranny of it. There's a lot to go over. I mean, just if we just talk about your bass players alone, this would be like a 3-part episode. It was like Shelby, Jason, bass. I'm not lying. There's a dozen bass players listed after that.
Wow, I like the wiki page. I haven't been here for a long time. It's like they were described by critics. And then like a little bracket that says who with question mark. And then the material near this tag possibly uses too vague attribution or weasel words. Kind of the story of our lives actually as a band. Like the critics kind of didn't really. We had a lot of weird reviews back in the day. I remember when Froze broke up when we released Weapons in 2001. Punk Planet, you know, we played punk shows. We were like, these are our people.
Sure.
They had like a 15-year-old writing the review who's just into like the new emo stuff that was exploding in 2001. He was just like, oh, another band that's, it literally was like two lines. It was like, another band that sounds like At the Drive-In, whatever. I was like, what?
What?
And then Pitchfork, which removed this review later, actually wrote a sympathy review. Like, you know, I'm not really that into this record, but the drummer's girlfriend died of cancer and the guitarist, you know, his dad got sick or something. So, you know, I'm not going to give it. It was like so lame.
Oh my, almost, he wrote that?
Yeah, it was really bad. So I was just like, I quit. I was like, I hate, you know, all the whole, it felt like the whole indie scene and the punk scene. I mean, the scene didn't, the people, the fans liked us and we felt that afterwards, but you know, kind of the established things around it. You feel like you're kind of plugged into a little bit, and that might have given you good reviews before, kind of, you know, were pretty negative, or like not even negative, totally just kind of weird.
Right.
This was disappointing, you know. But that one Pitchfork thing made me want to, like, you know, steel cage match.
Yeah, that's gross. That's totally. I don't even know. I mean, even someone that isn't a professional should know that that's just tasteless. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then I mean that review is gone. Pitchfork took it. I mean, whenever they probably just deleted a bunch of their old stuff that
wasn't
as professional. But yeah.
Well, they pulled it down. They pulled it down because it was old and they needed the space, or did they pull it down because that was an awful thing to write and they should have pulled it down?
I have no idea. You know, Pitchfork's kind of
sucks.
They're pretty big. I mean, they've become, I think, in a sense, what MTV was in the 90s.
I don't like Pitchfork.
In their own way. I'm not a fan. I mean, after that like, experience, I just stopped. I was like, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah. It's just clickbait that is designed a little bit more for the musician. In my opinion, it's just garbage. I'm not into it. But
yeah. And then, I mean, even now, I understand why press still exists, but at the same time, I don't, because I feel like we live in the internet age. You can get a stream so fast.
Yeah.
So why do I need to read words about a record? It makes absolutely no sense.
It made sense
in a magazine. When there are magazines in the 80s, 90s, and you're like, I don't, what is this guy talking about? I want to check out this whatever Bad Brains record or these punk bands from DC. This is crazy. But like now, it's like, why is this guy writing all this stuff? I mean, unless it's about like the background and like the writing process, like stuff that musicians are into.
I think it's going away. I think that we're just crapping out the same format that we're used to because we don't know the new ways yet. And I think we're still figuring it out as we go. And people ruined MySpace. People have ruined Facebook. People are going to ruin Twitter. It's coming. Then the next thing will come and we'll all jump on that. And then everybody will ruin that. It'll just be more commercials, you know? So I'm with you. I still think this whole underground DIY word of mouth thing is, I mean, I'm talking to a dude in Sweden. I sat down in front of my laptop. I clicked a few buttons and I'm speaking to a man 6 hours away, 6 hour time difference away. I just feel like I don't need somebody at a desk telling me that, no, this sounds like I have to drive in. I'll figure it out myself. I can click a couple buttons and decide if they remind me about the drive in or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. We could bitch about that all day. I really don't want to. It's not a fun topic. I understand the problems with it and everything, but I feel like there's so many people out there that are in agreement that everything that's going on is wrong and they hate it, yet everybody is subscribed to it. Everybody is involved with it. Everybody's still liking and favoriting, and I just feel like I just want to walk away. I just want to walk away sometimes.
I think it's interesting. I think.
Well, go ahead. You're Facebook a tech guy.
World, I think MySpace was more annoying because they actually had their fingers into the music and was curating top 10. So they became the MTV and they catapulted all like the hair metal emo bands, which kind of bastardized like kind of the DIY punk stuff that was leading to that in the 90s.
Right.
You know, it accidentally probably. I think it just was a matter of circumstance, like a big major media outlet kind of curating that and creating this thing. And in a way, Facebook I prefer because it is more organic.
Okay.
Because they don't have their fingers in on it. I guess they let other people like be the portal, like whatever websites, like music review websites or whatever. Yeah, you can buy likes, but I don't think that matters because I don't think people care. I think people, you know, if you look at the amount of likes, if you like you're a guy who runs a label, you look at the amount of likes and like 2/3 of them are from like India and Sri Lanka. It's obviously paid likes because there is this video floating around on YouTube where they analyze like Facebook likes. And it's when you purchase likes, you end up getting kind of like people that aren't even into that. It doesn't make any sense. It's almost like zombie users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're inflated. Total bullshit numbers, and it's just another numbers game, you know.
Yeah,
doesn't mean anything is silly. Kind of like your bass players. I'm kidding.
They mean something. But
no, yeah, I meant inflated numbers. I didn't mean anything. I'm sorry.
I mean, more with Facebook is slightly more organic, where MySpace was literally like fingers like right in the pie.
Being sure.
Like, check this. These are the top 10. So I think for young people kind of experiencing that, it put something right in front of them opposed to not.
Okay. But, all right. I can see that.
You know, so I kind of prefer, like, I kind of wish when I was doing our post Frodo's band, Decahedron, that MySpace didn't exist, that it was like now. Because I think we probably wouldn't have broken up, because I just feel like now, even though people get ridiculous, it's somehow more, I think it's less frantic, but maybe just because I lived through MySpace and all that stuff. And
right.
All that. And I don't really use Twitter. I, you know, it's too much word vomit, so.
Yeah, you do have to, definitely have to weed through that. Decahedron, let's talk about that. You, how'd you hook up with Joe of Fugazi?
That was interesting. Lived down the road from him, and he was putting out this band from DC called Dead Meadow, which is kind of stoner rocky, but a little, the vocals are a bit more, I don't know, a little more, I guess, psychedelic, for lack of a better term. Not, you know, not like, yeah, gonna ride the burning hand in the trunk to the far off land, you know. Understood, like fuzz riff. He was just a little more whiny and kind of
so good. Floating. I would buy that on Bandcamp for $1 right now. That was good.
Oh, the burning, like, oh, the, yeah, drive the truck. Yeah, that'll be one of my other future bands called Bog Monster.
Sure, so why not? Is Joe?
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. I interrupted you first. Let me finish interrupting you before you interrupt me. Is Joe currently in Fugazi at this time, or is this post, or is this a break? Like, where was he at?
He's still in Fugazi.
Okay.
So it was around the last. Wait, no. When I met him, he was still in Fugazi. When he was playing with us, it was right after.
Got it. Okay.
So I met him. You know, he was still in Fugazi. He's going to release his band Dead Meadow from DC. And so I knew those guys since forever ago. They were in a band called Impossible Five from DC. And I recorded the first two Dead Meadow records. So just through that, like, I met Joe because I recorded the records. And then I recorded Dead Meadow Peel session for the John Peel show. Actually, one of the only Peel sessions. It's kind of a neat, I'm proud of this one. And one of the only Peel sessions recorded outside of, you know, the BBC. It was recorded in Fugazi's basement and on their 8-track open reel. And it was a crazy, hectic session, but it was magic. And John Peel himself said, "Love those period drums." I was like, yeah.
Wow. Nailed it.
He got it. So, yeah, I was happy. And I think actually probably from what I've heard, it probably would have sounded better. It's better that we recorded it than they did it at the BBC, even though it's quote legendary to do it there.
Sure.
It's because at that point it was kind of a lot of the engineers recording stuff were kind of checked out, and I heard that their quality of recordings wasn't, you know, not always the best. Mm-hmm. But still cool, you know. So in the end, we did it in Joe's basement. That was super cool. And that actually came out last year on vinyl. And through that, just met Joe, hung out with him a bunch, did some graphic design with him, and then Fugazi stopped. And we were just jamming some ideas that I had, and he just was like, "Yo, I'll record with you guys," and he did. But then he didn't end up playing live with us. Jonathan Ford joined us live since Joe moved to Italy.
Italy.
Yeah, he has an Italian wife with an Irish accent.
No, then I don't believe that at all. No, you're starting to give too many people Irish accents. You already played that card.
Okay. No, she moved to Italy. They moved to Italy for a bit. So,
cool. Yeah. And John, I assume Roadside and Frodus just crashed into each other out there on the road somewhere, and you guys got to be friendly, like.
Yeah, we did that split 7-inch with Roadside in '97.
Right. Like, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. The nail thingy we did, and then it just made sense. He was looking for something. He had the time. He was still doing Unwood Sailor. He was down to do something else too. So he just jumped in the van with us and did it. And then I don't remember when he stopped playing with us. I think.
I can tell you. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page.
I don't remember actually why he didn't end up recording with us. I think he just was going to doing one of his other bands or other tours. So it was more of kind of filling in, I guess.
Continually plagued by bassist fluctuation anomalies.
Ooh. Yeah.
That one. Ford quit. That is wordy. I like that. Ford quit in 2004 and was later replaced by Jake Brown from Moments in Grace.
Yeah. So we knew Jake since Moments in Grace recorded with Brian McTernan. Brian McTernan recorded the last Brodus record, so it made sense. And we played some shows. Decahedron did some shows at Moments in Grace. So it was cool. Jake was on top of it. And he was actually one of the bassists who did the Frodus reunions in 2009.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see that later on. And how'd you hook up with Liam Wilson? I am a big Dillinger Escape Plan fan. I learned that today researching for this. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And then when I went and looked at a couple I guess it was a 2009, 2010 video, a live performance, I was like, oh my god, there's Liam. Get out of here. Like, he was in Dillinger at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, they were just there was some down. They had some downtime, and we were ready to do our little reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And he was down and ready at the time to be the bassist.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and we I don't know if we played with Dillinger. We played with we did tour with Dillinger. Decahedron was on the Dillinger Escape Plan Plea for Peace tour. The okay. Dillinger Escape Plan. Cursive and some other bands.
Mm-hmm.
We took Denali's spot.
What happened to Denali?
What a disappointment that was for the fans. get me up there instead of Mara. But
what happened to them? Why they had to drop out?
I don't know. I don't. Maybe they broke up. Actually, I think.
Oh well, yeah, that'll do it.
So we took their spot. And then, that must have been Plea for Peace tour. And then we did some other tour did some other shows at Dillinger. So it mm-hmm. just made sense. We knew sure. Liam through that. And
good choice. He played
in this band called, I believe, Stark Weather from Philly. That was around in the 90s. So
sounds...
we just go back.
Stark Weather from Philly sounds right. I don't know if Liam played with him or not. I actually never knew that.
I don't know. We could always check his wiki. But there was this connection with the East Coast hardcore scene and everything.
Sure.
Meeting him. So it just felt natural. Played with us some shows and did the South by Southwest and even recorded a 7-inch with us, the mm-hmm. Sound Lab 7-inch.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did Dillinger stuff. That's why Jake joined us for the last leg of those reunion shows.
Right.
Nathan couldn't do it at the time.
Speaking of your connections to the East Coast scene, I actually learned something else today. I think anybody who liked any bands from the DC area, from that era, if you're a big ignorant dummy like I am, you just assumed that the band was on Discord. I thought you guys had something out on Discord. Again, until today, starting to do the research and everything. And I thought, I guess one of the questions I did want to ask you is, how the hell did you get through that scene at that time in that area and not be on Discord? That sounds kind of a weird question. Maybe they never asked, but I mean, you guys just seem like a perfect fit.
Yeah, we're almost, I don't want to say almost, but like Ian lent us money when we were like fresh out of high school to record, to press some records, and we paid him back. Total old school style. He had this little piece of paper, like kind of taped to his desk with everyone that he lent money to, and he just crosses off when they pay him back. No interest, of course. He's just being a good guy, kind of like the godfather of DC. So he helped us out as youngins. And then one of our bassists, oh gosh, should I reveal these stories? Might as well. We're all older now. Howard, he kind of had a beef with Discord, and I believe told Ian up front, like, his beef with it, and so that kind of ruined Frodus's opportunity. I know Ian later didn't really, just equated it to Howard, not necessarily the whole band.
Okay.
But
do you remember what the beef was? Can you get into that? Who has beef with Discord?
Well, I mean, I could see I mean, I guess I can see. I think it was a misguided beef. I guess he was thinking in DC at the time, like, I mean, 90s at the time, like, things got super clicky. Like, you didn't have the internet, but you had, like, people were very clicky and very, like, you know, people would get really into, like, their uniforms and what they should be into. Whether it's, like, big pants, straight edge stuff, or, like, DC at the time, like, everyone's wearing gas station jackets, and whatever. And he just, Discord kind of had some people projected upon Discord that it was pretentious when it was not. Maybe some people crowd were, maybe some bands were, but it, not Ian, not Discord, super chill guys. So I think it was that misguided beef and kind of projecting it on Discord where it was never them.
Gotcha.
And maybe, like, you know, some people would be like, why aren't they putting out my band? It's just because Discord isn't Sub Pop. They're not out to, like, document Seattle. They're out to document their friends in DC.
Gotcha. So,
you know, we didn't become friends with them until much later, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we already kind of established our homes, and I think they might have been interested. They might have been open to it if we didn't already establish ourselves with, like, other DC area labels, like Love It Records. Because, you know, Ian likes to have other people's labels and stuff grow. So instead of, like, him putting out everyone and kind of, and becoming, like, the monopoly of, like, DC music, he, you know, he'll lend out money for, you know, no strings attached to, like, bands, labels. You know, he'll distribute stuff, he'll do split releases, he'll do all sorts of stuff to kind of help the scene grow. But the main idea is to create mini Discords, is to inspire other people to do it. So we already had that connection with Love It Records, you know, as well, like, later on in the career of Frotus and Decahedron and stuff. So it, I think in his mind, it felt like we were a Love It band.
Good answer.
If we never had that connection, maybe he would have jumped on it. One joke is I heard he was freaked out that our name sounded too much like Frodo. And he just wasn't into it. But I think he actually was kind of freaked out by that. I've had some confirmation that he's like, what the hell is this band? Like Frodo, like Lord of the Rings?
You gotta be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
That's funny.
I'm kind of into that.
That has nothing to do. The name Frodus has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. It was a monkeys monkey, episode, yeah. Right?
Right, but I mean, I like the idea of like someone not being into us because they're thinking about second breakfast.
Second breakfast. What about elevensies?
That's right. That's your scene, man. Crossbows and catapults.
Right up my alley, man. We'll be nice to them if they's be nice to us. Sorry.
So yeah, Discord. So I guess I answered your question there.
You did answer my question, and actually that kind of shed a light on it for someone that's not from the area. And I just know I'm up above Philly. I live about an hour north of Philly in the Lehigh Valley, and like Allentown ish at that area. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know what's going on in DC unless Discord tells me. Because I'm all the way up here, and I'm a kid without the internet. And okay, this record store has this now. So you just assume, okay, Sub Pop is everybody from that area is on Sub Pop. Everybody from this area is on Discord. Everybody from that area is on whatever. You know, pick an area, pick a label. But that makes sense because I think I understand what you mean without being there, without knowing the people involved, it does make sense that I mean, all the stories about Ian are lining up where the guy, I'm just trying to help everybody, even if it doesn't mean Discord, you know what I mean? I just love my area and I love the people that I'm surrounded by and that kind of thing. And it makes sense. I could buy that.
Yeah. It's totally awesome and totally completely unique. And DC scene, the 90s and 2000s, and I'm sure now, I don't know how big the punk, I mean, it is, there's new punk DIY is going to always be there because of what Discord started.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a great place for being in a band. And I think especially because it's not, there's no media for it. There's no recognition. It's not New York. It's not Los Angeles. It's just weird DC and it's like government town.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just all about the music. And I feel like I feel totally blessed to be like experience some of that stuff. Like in the 90s, just like seeing, just going to the Black Cat like every week to see bands, and I felt like there was a competition, but in kind of like what I could imagine maybe how the jazz world was in the 60s. Like you'd go see a band and they were doing some weird like kind of mathy off rhythm and something, and you'd be like, oh, that's awesome, I'm gonna like take that, kind of build off that and one up it, but not like ripping it off, just like inspire, like bands are inspiring each other to do music and like challenge themselves.
Right.
Like a moment in time, and it was awesome.
It's the way it should be. Every band that you've ever played in, any band that you've ever heard, any music that any of us buy, those people just got together and decided what all the favorite stuff they ever heard was and threw it together in a crock pot, and it cooked up different than somebody else's interpretation of it. We're all just it's all 12 notes, man. We're all just rearranging them differently, trying to anyway, you know? So your influences could have been exactly the same as another band, except that singer heard one other band that he was into that you weren't, and it made a totally different thing than what Frotus would have been, or the Cassettes, or whatever you were involved with, you know? And it's just, I don't know, I grew up listening to jazz music, so I have this in my blood now. And I grew up listening to what praise and worship music, whatever your parents had on in the background, you know? So it just kind of all seeps into that dry sponge, and who knows what's going to come out by the time you're, you know, 17, 18 and trying this by yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Totally. So that's a little bit of a light for those of us that don't understand the DC scene because we weren't down there and everything. That's cool. That was a good way that you put it, where he's trying to help. He's not about DC as much as I'm about my friends. We just all happen to be here in DC, you know? So,
and then he's super about DC in the sense that he will help other bands and help other labels grow and do all that. So I think it's 'cause he's not a business. He's not super business, you know, he's not trying to run a label as a business. It just happened to work that way, I guess.
Right.
Because his stuff sold since the 80s.
So how'd you happen upon Tooth and Nail? I find that to be an interesting, that's how I heard of you, because,
that was
conglomerate.
Because I believe the drummer of Frotus, Jason, had a Mr. Bishop's Fist cassette from somehow trading cassettes back in the 90s, demos, bands, you know, word of mouth stuff getting around, and kept in contact with Jonathan Ford, and they were, you know, Roadside Monument was on Tooth and Nail, and them just kind of being the portal for us to be on the label. It was like at this point where the label was trying to expand in the secular market, as you like to say, and they saw Frotus and wanted, I guess, I don't know if we were the guinea pig, but in a way maybe we were, to kind of just push this band in a whole different realm. It just so happened that we also were pushed in like the Christian market. They even asked us, like, do you not want us to do it in this market? And Jason's Christian. And I was like, we were all like, yeah, I don't care. I mean, music's music. If you want to do it. But, so, yeah. Which is kind of weird, because I think people kind of took us for being a Christian band. Some people who may have found us through those avenues. So, but that's okay. People could think what they want. You know, they found us, they got into it. It was just music, and Tooth and Nail was experimenting in this new era of the label.
Right.
And then, you know, we didn't play any of those festivals. I guess people figured it out eventually. Mm-hmm. So at the time it was getting weird, because other bands on the label were like, we don't want to be a Christian band. We're just a band.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll still do the big cornerstone to make like, thousands of dollars on merch or whatever at the time, which was really good, right? You know,
yeah,
something we elected not to do, because I think for Frotus we were all about, we wanted to be in, what with Frotus, I think the main idea is we want to be inclusive,
right?
We don't care what you're into. We're not gonna, you don't care if you're a Christian, we don't care if you're, you know, not, we don't care if you're an alien, just if you get what we're saying, if you get like our sound, then like let's party, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up on the label, and we were short lived on the label. We did that split 7-inch and Conglomerate, and they're recording. And as we were recording and Wash Your Weapons in the Sea, we were just like, we're not a good match to the label anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the label even agreed. They're like, yeah, we're kind of going back to focusing on what we did before, and everyone who worked behind our records quit and started new things.
Got it.
So it just, I actually found the contract recently where it's like, pay us what we paid for Weapons and you get it back and we part ways.
Mm-hmm. And then it was Fueled by Raymond, right?
It was supposed to be Sub Pop, but then they didn't want to put out a broken up band. And then Fueled by Ramen. And then
I would say Raymond.
It's fine. And then Fueled by Ramen, which it's great. Our friend Tony worked there. He saved the record from obscurity pretty much by doing that. And then Fueled by Ramen got big, like, you know, commercial emo. Became
right.
Basically an arm of Atlantic Records. And deleted their old catalog, including Frotis.
What?
Basically, they sold their whole old catalog to like a holding company that doesn't do crap with the record. So like our stuff's not on Spotify Europe. Our stuff's kind of Weapons is. You know, I mean, Weapons. I'm all for people just downloading that for free, pirate. They do whatever you want because that's a lost record. We will never see a cent from that record at this point.
Oh man, that's a shame. That's considered to be your best stuff, and that's the one that you can't. I mean, I know it's not about the money, but that's the one that you can't quote unquote cash in on because it's gone. It's just kind of slipped away with all the paperwork, right?
Yeah, I mean, we retained vinyl rights, so we have the vinyl for that coming out later this year on Love It Records. So that's cool. But you know, it would have been nice if Fueled by Ramen had a sense of like their label history and where they came from. And, mm-hmm. you know, for example, Epitaph puts out some of the most cheesy music known to man, but also puts out some good stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And you have a sense of their history. They'll reissue like Refused or whatever. Like Fueled by Ramen could have been that, but no, they just became total major label cheese balls, which I guess if you're a businessman, more power to you, if that's what you're into, but,
sure.
As far as a sense of label history, it just seems dumb. I mean, it's just a bummer. It's a bummer for the band, you know. So I'll always respect like Epitaph, despite of them, you know, putting out Falling in Reverse or whatever bizarre form of music that they managed to find that pieces together the corpse of punk rock and this Frankenstein of, I don't know. I'll still respect the label in a way.
Right.
Because of the history.
They got to keep the lights on. It's getting harder to sell records
than
it is, you know? That's cool.
Is that the excuse?
I don't even work in a label. What the hell am I saying?
I don't know. I know.
That's the impression I get, is you got to have your, you know, I mean, Windup had good intentions too, and Creed paid a lot of bills, you know, like whatever, do what you got to do, I guess.
I mean, I guess it's a difference of me running a business and I don't know. I grew up in DC. My idea of a label is my like model. The golden label for me is like, doesn't run itself at all like that. to me, that just seems weird, but
right, you know,
if you're doing a business, then it's not weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I had this discussion with a friend recently where we were talking about like somebody who owns a bakery, for instance. I'm going to go off on a weird tangent, but I'll circle back, so give me a minute. You know, a person is getting up early in the morning and they're mixing the ingredients and they're making cupcakes with their own blood, sweat, and tears and their hands, and I made that, and now it sits in the glass case and you come in and buy it for more than normal, but that's because it was made by scratch by this dude or this lady in the back, you know. And then when it gets popular enough, you have to start buying bigger equipment. You have to start mass producing these things. You have to start making assembly lines. And now I can't mix the batter by hand anymore. I gotta have this machine do it. And I'm still doing it by hand, but I'm not doing as much by hand because I have to produce more and I have to, well, now I can't do it by hand because I gotta run the business too. So I gotta hire this person. I'll teach him how to run by, but it's still mine. Like, it's gone. Like, the original thing that you fell in love with was making cupcakes. And now you have to stop making cupcakes because you're being forced to make cupcakes. You follow what I'm saying?
No, but I think that's an incorrect model because
okay,
Discord will always make cupcakes, but labels that start putting out, like, just put out the weirdest stuff just to, like, stay afloat, they're going Cronut, even though they know Cronut's not that great, but mm-hmm. they're just doing it because the masses want the Cronut. It's a very philosophical question. Do you stay and go forward to create the perfect cupcake and master the art of the cupcake, find the other cupcakes, those variations, and be like, this is the cupcake? Or do you just go, screw the cupcake, screw my past, I'm doing Cronuts, I'm doing like crappy cakes.
Yeah.
12 inch cakes. No love. Kale. Unwashed kale on a cake.
But you're right. My comparison to
what Epitaph did.
No, my comparison to label doesn't fit as much, but you're right. That's kind of where we're at with the whole, like, what am I doing this for? Am I doing it because I'm trying to get bigger and produce more money, and or am I doing this because I love it? Because once you love it and it gets too big for you to handle it, now it's become a money thing. And there's got to be some threshold in there where you voluntarily step over a line and go, okay, I'm not going back anymore. I gotta keep the lights on, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, but this is the difference. Epitaph, they still do the cupcakes. They'll make some Cronuts, put out some crazy pastries.
Right.
Gilbal Ramon said, screw the cupcakes. We're doing Cronuts and whatever the people want us to do.
Nothing but Cronuts.
Nothing but Cronuts. They even sold their cupcakes, their babies. They're like, their cupcake recipe, they just threw it aside.
I'm hungry now.
So, you know, I like cupcakes.
Let's shift gears completely because you have one of these. We're talking about cupcakes. People are probably thinking, what the hell are these two drinking? But
no, water. I'm drinking water.
Oh, I'm not. Disaster! For humanity to take down now! Do not skip! I deserve! Got your chance died! Not my say! Let goodness! Not my sin, goodness! Goodness and not my say! Not my sin, goodness! Goodness and not my say! Everyone's a soul! My teeth are bleeding! Everyone's a go off on a totally different tangent here because you have a very interesting tangent to go on. I get to say the next sentence to you for the first time ever. I've never, ever, ever said this to a person before in my life. Are you sitting down? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What goes into making a board game?
Insanity?
I know nothing about it. How did you even, what happened? One night you woke up and you had one of those moments where you were making shit out of mashed potatoes and you had to like write something down, or is this something you've been working on for 15 years? What's Zoneplex all about?
I'm in Sweden. The winters are long. It's dark. Work's not going too good. I don't have a band anymore. It's 2010. You know, we did the Frost reunions.
Eating too many Cronuts. And
no Cronuts, but just...
Oh. Man,
just a lot of time to think, and playing board games, like kind of the second wave, third wave. I don't know what you want to call it, like the newer indie board games. Playing
okay.
it with a bunch of buddies that I know out here, and then just kind of had an idea after playing various games, and then one of the other buddies gamer bunny, but bunnies, bunnies. Kenny went to game design school, and it just made sense. I just had this idea, and he's like, "All right, let's flesh it out." And that was it. We just kept on refining, and then eventually Kickstarter and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say it's a, our game was a bestseller, but it's out there, you know?
You made a board game. What's it about? What, explain Zomplex to me.
Zomplex is a, it's a multiplayer board game where we go in together and explore like this space pyramid at the edge of the universe. And have to face the strange creatures that come in that from the pyramid and capture them so you become worthy enough to unlock the apex of the pyramid and control it and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the game is built is that everyone's helping each other because the creatures are difficult in the game. And then towards the end, there's only one winner. So people start turning on each other. So, you know, anyway, it's kind of a it's a guided story in a way, because that's the way it always ends up in the
game. Sounds a little bit like Survivor, where you make alliances to start eliminating people, but then when it comes down to it, one of you has to get a rock across the head because I want to win, right?
Exactly. So yeah, Survivor in a space pyramid. That's a good, you gotta remember that one.
No, it's not. That's not good at all. It's the first thing that popped in my head.
No, but if you want to explain it really fast, like people are like, oh, okay, I get it. But as far as like the game mechanics and all that stuff goes, it borrows from kind of a lot of different ideas in gaming. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And like the gaming of today, there's Euro gaming, which is Euro games consist of more kind of building, resource management, like farming, you know, kind of, you're just kind of getting points and victory points by kind of managing this a system.
Whether okay. Like you're
middle age, like farmers in the Middle Ages or whatever.
Okay.
American style board gaming is more destructive. They actually call it Ameritrash is the nickname for it.
No kidding.
Is more destructive, like war games, like strategic and dice, a lot of dice oriented, like randomness and all that. So Zomplex kind of combines both worlds of that. It's kind of in between. So in a funny way, it was almost like the Frodus of board games when it came out, because it was very divisive. Like people like loved it or hated it. Exactly kind of like Frodus in the 90s. It was like, you guys are too weird for hardcore and you guys are too heavy for indie rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Frodus was always in the middle in the 90s, like pretty misunderstood, played a lot of empty rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people, the younger generation that kind of adopted us with when Weapons came out, they got it. They got what we were doing, especially right. On the last record when we started to sing. Like when we started to play Weapons songs live in 99, right before we broke up, like people were just like, what the hell? You know, it's just because we're jumped too fast. I don't know. They just wrapped around their heads around Conglomerate International and the mathiness on that. And then we're doing like Weapons. So, yeah. So Zomplex is a bit of Frodus in my Frodus life repeating in a board game, which in the end, I kind of just start thinking it's funny.
A little bit ahead of your time.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing necessarily. Noel Gallagher from Oasis once said, it's not good about being ahead of your time because you never make any money. I mean, I don't care about the money part, but he has a point.
Yeah. Good point.
I mean, I do other things I don't focus on making money with music, which is why I do whatever the heck I want.
Right.
You know, and why I don't milk reunions and all that stuff.
Right.
I'm probably like I guess typical difficult artist member in the band. And I recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I apologize to all bandmates.
it's pretty much your ship to steer. So, I mean, if that's the decision that you want to make, then I mean, you don't have, Frodis isn't in a position of, I have to do the big festival thing because we have bills to pay kind of a thing. I mean, Frodis is free and clear, right? It's
yeah. I mean,
you know, you get,
we
to
did
do,
our stuff in 2009.
Yeah.
I want to do another Soundlab 7-inch. That was super fun.
Mm-hmm.
The one we did with Liam. So definitely open to trying to write something. But as far as like doing the whole reunion circuit, and there's, you know, people always want us to do the reunion thing. And as soon as like a band that's kind of related to us in the 90s starts playing live, they're like, why don't you do it? I'm like, what about the one we did in 2009? Is that Chopped Liver? What was that?
How'd it go?
So, that one was awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to be that band that always does reunion things like all the time. You know, there has to be, and not necessarily like behind a new record.
Right.
I feel like it should just be happen organically, which is kind of how the reunion in 2009 happened. We were in a room. It was a crazy story. We were at the Swedish Embassy, Division of Laura Lee. My friends were playing there in 2009, 2008. Mm-hmm. And the PA was like breaking out and just things weren't working out. And the band kind of like flipped out and like threw their stuff down and left the stage. And then our friend Mike were pushing me and Jason together. He said, go on stage, go on stage, go on stage. We're like, what? And eventually we just went up on stage and then froze Invisible Timelines. I showed my friend Sadat the bass line, kind of. And we just did this. We just played it during Division Laura Lee's show at the Swedish Embassy. We're like, that was fun. Yeah, I'm moving to Sweden soon. Let's do a reunion thing.
And everything you're saying lines up with your Wikipedia page. Because Sadat Awan, bass player for Impromptu Live Performance at the Swedish Embassy, WDC 2008. How you like that?
Yeah, and the timing was right. Like Gilead Media was putting out Conglomerate International again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the banks were collapsing. I don't know, it just felt very Frodis.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's do it. And it was fun Frodis, because Weapons kind of ended on a intense note with like the deaths and sicknesses around us. So Conglomerate, it just felt like revisiting a kind of a fun era of Frodis.
Can we go to that part of the conversation where you can talk a little bit about the sicknesses and everything? I mean, you mentioned the Pitchfork review included it for some weird reason, but you said that your drummer's girlfriend passed away.
Yeah, she got cancer I don't remember when, but we found out like while we were in the studio, or a little prior to the studio, that she was sick. Kind of a blur that time, and so she had cancer, passed away the next year in 2000 in March. And my dad got a stroke. It was the same week. Same week we found out she had cancer, and my dad had a stroke.
Wow.
That's why that song 699 is called that, because it happened in June 99. And it just kind of screwed everything up. Oh, and at the time, Nate's girlfriend at the time cheated on, I don't know, something crazy happened with Nate too. No, okay. That was when we were recording Conglomerate. Something crazy happened on Nate too. So, but it wasn't death or sickness involved. So yeah, it was just a crappy week. And then it kind of painted the whole session for that record. And there was a lot of frustration in that record, just like sick of touring, mm-hmm. sick of being in a band, sick of the scene, like the scene around the time, sick of stupid vans that broke down, sick of each other to an extent. Like it's all there on that record. But then at the end, it ends like on a kind of positive note with the instrumental song. So it was just a cathartic record, man.
Cathartic. Good choice of words. Yeah. Just had to exercise a few demons.
Yeah, and for me, it's not a fun record. I don't really like listening to it. I know I like some of the stuff we did. I'm happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Very proud of it. Like we were proud enough that we're like, we don't need to play shows. This is perfect. This is the last record. So it's good, but it's just not a fun era of Frodis. And maybe that's why, like, maybe I'm being like overly emotional, but maybe that's why I don't want to, even though the fans want see that record live or whatever, or around that time, even though we played some of those songs during the conglomerate stuff,
mm-hmm.
It's not a fun record and not a fun time. And even me putting, like, doing the layout for that, the reissue layout was like, I bought like all the MP3s basically of like records I was listening to around conglomerate just to like put myself there.
Right.
And then when I was done laying it out, I was like, I just freaking had an emotional, like, reunion in my mind, just zoomed in at 300%, editing like the photo collage and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just spent. I was like, I don't want to do a reunion behind this record now. Like, this is too hard. But, you know, if like I never count anything out, like if it's just like a normal thing, like do a sound lab, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just pick up where we left off. That feels cool to me.
There was too much going on, and you just absolutely poured everything you had left into the album, and then went, oh God, we didn't play for this yet. Like we didn't hit the road yet. It's too much. You know what I mean?
So yeah, if there would ever be like a reunion in current times, I think it would just have to happen like fun, like at like the Swedish Embassy one, and all about picking up where it's left off. Like for me personally, like doing like playing it start to Protus is back, performing the critically acclaimed and Roger Webbs in the Sea from start to finish. Buy your double cassette now on 1-800. Throw to face.
I like your movie guy voice. That's pretty cool. You overlooked that. You can do that on the side too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but like that, like just like too much for that record. It's just too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like putting that much for me, that's not the spirit of Frodo to do something like that. You know,
right.
Maybe for other bands. But
right.
Yeah, it is an intense record, and even intense doing the layout. But I gotta say, the coolest thing with like the reissue is when I was doing the layout, I found a letter that Nathan, the bassist, played on that record and conglomerate, wrote and gave me in 2001. He was meant to give it to me on New Year's Eve 99, but then didn't and gave it to me in 2001. And it's a freaking awesome letter at the time, like him saying why he was. We were still talking about doing shows around then, jamming, but always one of us would be kind of out of orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular letter he wrote was like, you know, why he didn't want to do any shows. And he's like, we put everything into it and it's kind of like our best work. And that's that. And you shouldn't do anything because like jealous of your peers, like whatever, at the drive and all these bands, like having successes, just never sell yourself short or your creativity. Just he's like, as a fan of you and Frodo's, just like, I'm excited to what you contribute musically to life. And it's just a freaking awesome letter. And along with the letter, he gave me a cassette of him recording like one of the early Frodo songs from 93, like him in his like college dorm on a 4-track doing a cover of it before he even joined the band, just as a fan. And he gave me that cassette with the letter, and so it was so cool. I found all that stuff I wrote when I was doing the reunion layout, like the layout to the not reunion, the reissue the layout.
Reissue.
That we're doing a 7-inch for of like that track, and the letters printed right on the front. So I think for people that dug us, they'll kind of to pick up the extra 7-inch. They'll get a whole glimpse on the inside of, you know, kind of what was happening.
That's neat.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. I was excited to find it.
Put you back It puts you back in that time, and also gives you a new perspective on it. Because, you know, if I sit here and reminisce about pick a year and I think about it, I only can think about it from my perspective. But then if I find a letter from somebody else's perspective of it at the time, it totally spins what my perspective was, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. That's pretty cool. That's kind of a little hidden treasure that you found. Where did you find it? You said you found it. Where?
I slipped the letter in my copy of the LP of Weapons, which was a Czech pressing.
Okay.
Pressed in the Czech Republic. There was a label that released some Frodo stuff from there in the 90s, and they did the vinyl for Weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just found it and that was that. Scanned it, and we made it happen.
Okay, I think we're rounding third. We're doing good here. The one of the things that I'd like to cover before we part ways here is your ridiculously long Bandcamp page, Shelby. For crying out loud, this is the biggest Bandcamp page I've ever seen. I haven't seen them all, but I've seen a lot. I don't even know.
I like making music.
You do like making music on what appears to be a daily basis. I'm scrolling through it. Let's see. It's one.
No, I think there was a big burst in. When Frodus broke up, I was just a freelance graphic designer. I didn't have that many girlfriends. I don't know. Just making records.
11. It's 11 deep and it's 6 wide. I'm looking at 66 releases.
Yeah, 66. And the funny thing is, like, me revisiting, like, the Frodus-related kind of surf instrumental band, like, in 2009 or 2010 it was. That just happened out of nowhere. It was, like, that was kind of like Zomplex in Sweden.
Right.
Dark, long winters. And it was also cathartic because my dad ended up passing away, and then I just played a lot of, guitar and gym. The original Frodus bassist and the collaborator for Travelers of Time, he was going through a divorce, and it just synced up. So we just emailed stuff back and forth and got in the zone and recorded so much stuff.
This Travelers of Time is all over the place, dude. They're everywhere.
Yeah, so me and Jim just, we time traveled.
Ah.
We brought it back. We brought it back to life from 1995.
Nice.
It was fun.
And tell me about the cassettes.
Oh, cassettes. That happened like right when Frodus, right near when Frodus was ending in 99.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing the cassettes. You know, having my little indie rock 4-track recordings from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Being really into like Elephant Six, like Olivia Tremor Control, and like Apples and Stereo and those bands, like stuff that wasn't Frodus-y at all. Okay. Just me wanting to do the, like, record that kind of stuff. And what happened when Frodus broke up, I focused a lot on that. I think kind of in a, not to sound like too hippie, but kind of in a weird healing way, like do something like positive.
Mm-hmm.
And not pretentious, just with some friends, and just putting, you know, your heart on your sleeve, not caring what anyone thinks, just like, just doing it for yourself. And I think it kind of helped, like, it definitely helped me cope with kind of the darkness at the end of Frodus and all that. So did that. And then if I'm looking at the Bandcamp too, I had a pause with like a Decahedron occurring, and then kind of back to the cassettes, which then turned out to be, it became a bit more, the lineup solidified, and then it became a bit more eclectic, like a theremin player and accordion player and all that stuff. So it kind of, it became its own thing. The template was that particular Beatles song, Rocky Raccoon. You know that one? Do you listen to Beatles?
I do. I can't think of Rocky Raccoon.
It's White Album. Paul McCartney sings it. He's like, little story about a raccoon named Rocky Raccoon. He's kind of doing like this kind of Americana thing, but he's British, and it's kind of this British skiffle. I just like the whole idea of interpreting something and not really knowing, not being from there, and kind of you're doing your own version.
Okay.
You guys did, like, rock and roll. And it was kind of building off that one specific song and, like, becoming the template of the band in a way.
Okay, that's interesting.
And so we just rolled with it, and just the songs we're writing were around, kind of was focusing around that. And it became its own thing.
That's
fun.
That kind of lends to the previous little rant that I went on, was you seem to be very aware of perspective, you know? Trying to look at it from all angles is my point.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes too aware.
whatever. You know?
And then that's how that happened. You can look at the Bandcamp and kind of fill in the gaps. Man and Wasp was like basically what Decahedron would have been, but with Mike Schleibaum from Darkest Hour. And
I remember seeing that advertised somewhere. Yeah, I remember that.
So that's what that is. And then like me doing electronic music is, I mean, I've always been goofing around with it since just being on tour and like on a Game Boy and then on a laptop and being like being in Sweden, just not having anyone to like play with, and being a nerd, like being into like video game music and like 80s synth stuff, 80s soundtracks and all that. So
that explains
all that. So I don't know. As Bandcamp says, music explorer. I dig exploring.
Sure does.
I mean, most lately, like, I don't have, like, I did Travelers of Time record, but I've been playing a lot on this guy, El Huervo's records.
I was just about to say, El Huervo is the most recent thing, and I see that a little bit towards the end. What's that?
It's this guy, Nicholas Åkerblad. It's his electronic music, but he has me play guitar all over it. And we did a specific song, that Daisuke single. And it was on that indie video game Hotline Miami, and that game sold like a million copies or something.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, like, I run a label, like Swedish Columbia, putting out like a lot of his stuff. And then I had to run a real label because like he had started to get real fans like clamoring after that song, and because of his, you know, his music being in that video game Hotline Miami. So started pressing records for him and just rolling with it with that. And it's crazy because that's the most heard song I've ever done in my life. People will write me and all that, not know anything about Frodo. It's just because of that song in the video game Hotline Miami. It's crazy. It's nuts.
Interesting.
And the video game world is the fans are super cool. Like they for them, like running a record label focusing on like music that's in video games, the fans buy records. They want to own physical stuff. They buy MP3s.
Mm-hmm.
It's super super supportive, and I actually think it's because, you know, where iTunes came late in the game of kind of saving digital music, it got all messed up by Napster and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like Steam for video games, which is kind of the iTunes or App Store for indie video games, they came at the right place at the right time, and the young people in the community around that educated everyone pretty quick that you got to support like developers so they make more games. And so that scene around it, just they support everything. They support the artists. They support the developers. They buy the music. It's very different. It's almost feels like going back in the 90s. Like it's not jaded at all.
Right.
It's very pure. And like even to the point of like, you know, these kids like they're buying the 7-inches and not even having record players. And just like buying record players for the first time.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Being like, why is there smudge on the records? I'm like, dude, it's because it's orange vinyl isn't pure, you know, there's just some black vinyl that's in there. Don't try and rub it off. Like someone like literally trying to rub it off and writing me an email. I'm like, man, you don't do that. The guy wrote me, it was like, I took rubbing alcohol to the record because it had this black splotch. I'm like, dude,
no.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at nowadays. I mean, don't have like with work and everything, don't have that much time to, go full on like doing my own stuff, but you know, doing the El Huervo stuff and whatever comes along with collaborators, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. Keep on trucking,
and it's called Keep On Trucking. That you're American, you're American. Trucking. Come on,
space trucker.
Come on, let's go space trucking. The Swedish Columbia site here. I'm going down the rabbit hole a little bit. occasionally printed clothing, mostly electronica music, and you got a bunch of stuff on here now. This just keeps going and going. My goodness, look at all these bands on here.
The background with that label is because I knew all these people and punk bands and all that making electronic music and in the vans, and I was like, I'll put it out. Who cares if it's good or if you like it, why not put it out there?
Mm-hmm.
Someone may dig it. And so that's where it happened. And then the ethics are total discord when it comes to the label. Discord actually does the mail order for the El Cuervo releases. So,
oh really?
It's a whole other funny layer to it. Yeah.
Circling all the way back around to Ian, huh?
Yeah. And that's even funny too, because they'll sometimes get like someone will write and be like, can I come and just pick up the record? I'm in town. And then like a kid will come in and have absolutely no idea what Discord is. They said like a 6-year-old couple from like, I think in England came and picked up one of the records once. The power of video games these days, nuts.
How about that? Yeah, it's a world I'm not familiar with. I'm not a gamer, but I know that there's exclusive releases in just video games. And speaking of, wasn't it Paul McCartney that did, he just did like some sort
Destiny.
Of a...
Destiny.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he did the song for that Destiny video game.
Yeah, and it's like a huge deal, and it's only available, like you can't, I mean, I guess you could probably go to iTunes and download it, I would imagine, but the version of it that everybody was hearing was from a video game. I never thought of that. When I was playing video games when I was a kid, it was all MIDI. You know what I mean? It all sounded like everything sounded like the theme to Press Your Luck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Didn't have any music playing in it, you know? And I remember at one point, I'm a huge Police fan. Your story actually reminded me of the Police because part of your story did. Their 2007 and 8 reunion stemmed from Sting's wedding, where all three of them were there, and they're like, come on, play something. They got on stage and played Roxanne and So Lonely or whatever. Next thing you know, I'm paying $50 to go see him at Hershey Stadium. You know what I mean? But it was an impromptu.
How it should be.
Yeah, it had a cool vibe to it. When the Police stopped in 83, 84, they all went in different directions, started doing their own thing, solo careers or whatever. Stuart Copeland, their drummer, went down the movie soundtrack. He was doing it the hard way. He didn't know how to do it, and he got into making music too. And the first experience I ever had to it was Spyro the Dragon on PlayStation. I heard that Stuart Copeland did all the music for the entire video game. And I was like, I'm buying it. I'll buy it. I just want to hear the music. I literally bought a $20, $30 PlayStation game just so I could play it and listen to the music. And actually, it's not a timed game. So you can stick your dragon up on the top of a hill where nothing's going to happen to him. And he just turns around and looks at you like, are you going to do something? And I used to just let it loop. I would just let it play in the background like I was listening to a record.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm such a big Police fan that I was like, I'm all in. I'll listen to what Stuart Copeland has to do. And that was my God, what year was that? I not even 2000. So it's still a viable thing. It's still trucking, you know. And I'm impressed. I'm impressed with how it's come along. With now it's interactive to the point you can play along with. You know, I have a Rock Band 15 or whatever, so now I can jam along to an Iron Maiden song on my fake drum set and everything. It's really neat. It's really neat if you play your cards right that you can kind of mesh the two together, you know? I don't know. Whatever. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm not a game guy.
I think people spend a lot of time playing games and they have like Hollywood budgets now. So
yes.
And actually, not all of them have Hollywood budgets, but it's definitely a powerful outlet for people mm-hmm. discovering music.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
So I know in the beginning of this, you mentioned that you said you had a kid? You have a child?
Yeah.
Tell me about the kid.
It's that's why we're in Sweden, to have our kid. He's a year and a half. He's not on Facebook, so many people don't even know.
It's not on
Facebook. But He's not. No one has any idea.
You have to be two to be on Facebook, I think, right?
Is that actually a rule?
No, I have no idea. I think you have to be 13, but everybody has to the range. Come up
with. Yeah. I mean, that's why we came back to have the kid. We came back to have him here. So.
Right.
He's rad. I don't know if you have kids. Do you have kids?
I have three kids.
Three kids. Okay. Yeah, man. So you know very well. You're beyond. I'm just on number one.
Well, you want to hear something funny? Awesome, I only had one kid for about an hour because my wife had twins.
Wow.
Right out the chute, we had a shoot. That's probably not the best analogy I could have came up with, but
makes sense.
Our daughter was born at 9-something, and our son was born at 10-something. So I had one kid for less than an hour. I've had two from the beginning, so I have no idea what it's like to have one kid. Must be a totally different game.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, it is. It is the best. It's the greatest.
I don't know if I ever thought. Never really thought if I'd have kids or not when I was younger. I think it's funny. My mom was like, "You should have kids." She'd always kind of pester me, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna do my music stuff." Blah, blah, blah. Mm. And then I got like after actually experiencing it, I was like, "Ah, she was right. We should have started earlier." Because it's an insane experience.
Perspective. We keep circling back to perspective, man. It's a totally different ballgame when you're living for somebody else. Like it's like if you make a mistake at work, you lose your job. If you piss off a girlfriend, you're single. You make a mistake with a kid, it could die. Like you need to be like the whole like I put everything into making sure that, you know, that we're home to feed, to get it to bed, to do everything that we need to do to get it to be healthier and that kind of thing. And you give so much that there's not a lot of room to think about yourself. And when you do get that time, it's very precious. It's not like the time that you had to yourself when you were 23, because all that time was yourself. But now it's really like, man, when I get a chance to sit down on a podcast and talk to some dude about his old band Frodus, I actually get an opportunity to like, it's my time. I can do this now. It means a lot because I don't get a lot of my own time anymore, you know, and you know, that's what kids are all about. It's about teaching you to just constantly sacrifice of yourself. Like that's what a lot of people have come to me. Not a lot of people, not like I'm in a position of people coming to me for advice, but I had kids earlier than a lot of friends and they were like, what's the secret? And I was like, the secret is that you keep looking for this one giant compromise. Okay, as soon as I decide to do blank, I'll be okay. Nope, it's dozens of compromises every day, whether you like them or not. And you can't sit down and decide that you're ready to do that because it's too much for anybody. You just when you find yourself in that position, you just do it. And you just have less and less of yourself to deal with because you're giving it to somebody else. And I think that's growth. That's the real, I mean, that's not real, because that's not fair for people that can't have them or have decided not to have them. But that's where I found growth. You know, I was finally able to set my own personal bullshit aside and be like, okay, I have twins to deal with now. And then we're pregnant and got a third one. And I'm like, okay, I have no time to be me anymore. I have to be dad. I have to like keep the lights on. Here we go again with the lights, you know?
Yeah. Make them cupcakes. But yeah, I think,
don't make fun of me.
That
was a good analogy, Shelby.
It was good. It was good. I totally agree. I like that it's like an ego destroyer.
Oh, tell me about it. Right.
I love that. Because,
right.
You know.
Right.
I'm not saying I have a big ego. Like I'm blah blah blah. I'm more just like, you know, get out of your head. Like,
eat your Cheerios. I was in Frodus. Do you know who you're talking to?
Yeah, like not that, like more like, you know, being like, I'm the paid artist. These are my records, my serious works, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. It just like slaps you out of it.
Yep, right on.
It destroys like the ego. And I think, not to go like Buddhist, but I think like the ego, like, you know, creates like these inhibitors to other people. Mm-hmm. Like if people just like demolish their ego, then they could, you know, we wouldn't be shooting each other. We wouldn't be doing a lot of things because we wouldn't be stuck in our heads as much. I mean, I think kids are great because they totally, they can like it, by the whole experience just like smashes your ego in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to think about something else. You're not stuck in your head. And to top it off, I mean, birth is so sci-fi. I was just like, this is not real. Like, I was like, this is not real. This is ridiculous. A person came out? Come on.
Birth is sci-fi.
Dude, it's so sci-fi.
I stood there and watched all three of them, and I have to admit, I didn't get sick. I didn't get scared.
Because you're just like, what's going on?
Yeah, I just stared, jaw open, just like, I can't believe this process. This is
Welcome to literally being a mammal.
Yeah, being a mammal, right?
Welcome to mammal. Yeah, it was like, it was intense. I was talking to actually Liam from Dillinger about it. He just had a kid. And I was like, it was when I first held the kid, like my dad died a few years ago and all that. I felt like this weird connection to ancestry. And I never really think about ancestry. I don't really think about like great granddads. I just don't. And I just felt this weird connection. And I was like, this is creepy. I'm not creepy, but this is, I can't explain it.
Supernatural.
Like supernatural.
If we don't want to slap it with spirituality, then we can use the word supernatural. I think that's a safe vocab word. It's definitely some other level. And I attribute it to spirituality and God and all that and everything. But if that's not where people are, you have to admit that there's something bigger than mammals made more mammals going on, you know?
Native Americans talk about, I've read Native Americans talk about like kind of the connection to ancestry and stuff. I kind of thought about that initially, like,
right.
Just feeling like the strong connection to like some lineage and all that.
Yeah.
It was just, and I never thought about it. And Liamson was like, I felt exactly the same thing. Like that is crazy.
That's cool.
So I just didn't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's,
I was in the room. It's something. I was in the room when my father passed away in 2007 and I felt something happen. I actually felt some sort of a weird vacuum in the room. And I think that was him leaving. And the only thing that I've ever felt similar to that was my single son being born after my father's death, like within the same year. He was born in September 11th, actually, of 2007. And my dad died in March. And there was like a March, April, May, June, July, half a year separation between the two. And I felt some sort of a weird separation and then some sort of a, it's back. And I didn't feel that with the twins because I think I had to go through the loss to understand it. You know what I mean? The twins was just first baby and then second baby right away. And it was all just I'm a new dad. What the hell is going on to my wife's body? You know, it was all a lot of, to be flippant about it, almost comical at some points. Cause it was just like, yeah, having a baby. Oh, it's twins. Oh, I have to buy a house. Oh, I have to quit school and get a job. Sure. Pile it on. What else is going to go wrong? You know what I mean? It just turned into a point where it was like, I can't. I'll just, okay, whatever. Pile it on, Lord. I'll do it. And then there was definitely a spiritual thing with the third kid because of the loss of the dad and the gain of the kid and everything. I felt it too, man. I'm right there with you. Absolutely something in the room.
I felt a similar vacuum.
Vacuum is the only way I can describe it. I felt some sort of a weird, like if you're in a room and when the door opens, it actually pulls the shades because the door seals and you can actually feel the little tiny bit of pressure on your ears and you actually feel the room, the air in the room move a little bit because the door sealed. That's what I felt. It just had some sort of a weird kind of a feel to it. I was like, he's gone. I felt him. He's gone now. This body is worthless. Bury it. Felt nothing for it anymore because I knew he wasn't in the room anymore. Weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, I felt that. I was there when my dad passed away and I felt I mean, it felt like, I don't know, like weird dark void, but I felt like I was feeling like this, like the sickness, like he was struggling with as well. It's definite vacuum, but it was something, maybe something else. I don't know what it was.
We can't explain.
It's just the feeling of death. It's just weird.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like, I mean, birth that felt, I know what you mean. There's kind of like a vacuum of focus, I guess.
Okay.
But it felt different. I can't explain. It still felt like there, yeah, I can see, I think vacuum, but a different kind of vacuum. It's like a vacuum. It's going, it's opposite.
Reverse,
it's still
reverse polarity.
Reverse.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, there's one coming in.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Very,
I mean, cool. I have my theories.
Okay. Lay it on me. It's a podcast. Who cares?
You know, dark matter is out there and you need energy. Energy always has to go somewhere. So I just think it all goes into like the dark matter and then just comes back.
Mm-hmm.
It's recycled.
Got to put it somewhere.
Purely from like a physics standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But so, I mean, I think maybe that describes some of the vacuum feelings. Like it's going into this like other area that's unattainable for, you know, three-dimensional beings. The energy particles go blue. Actually, I even go deeper, not to get weird on this podcast, but whatever.
Dude, it doesn't matter. Go ahead, man. Weird it out.
I think when you feel like, I know that someone, I feel like I know that person from somewhere, blah, blah, blah. I think it's literal, physical. Like, I think it's your particles, you're going to dark matter, and then it's just in this pool. And then when new life comes, like parts get recycled. So literally, if you feel like you know someone or whatever, or deja vu, it's because that person is actually you. You share like the same, maybe like a 1/1,000,000th, or there's something. You share like some sort of particle.
Okay.
This is more like physics, less spirituality, more like physics. You know what I mean? And because of that, there's actually you feeling this thing.
Uh-huh. I follow you. I can, yeah.
Maybe.
That sounds heady.
But I'm the sci-fi guy, you know? Going back to that.
That's awesome. But I'm the sci-fi guy. We'll just blame that. The guy's always talking about dark matter. That's great. Yeah,
I mean.
That was good. Shelby, I got nothing else for you, man. This was great. I really feel like we did a good job talking to each other and having not even known each other before. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's one time, man.
Yeah, this was good. Anything else you want to talk about? This is where normal people would say, do you want to plug anything? But I mean, you got anything else that you felt that you feel in your heart you want to dump out there for people to hear?
I don't know. Do you like pro wrestling?
No.
Oh, damn.
I mean, if you want to talk about it, yes, I love it.
You gotta be into it. I feel like I got back in when we had our kid. I don't know why. I just started thinking about like my childhood. And I was like,
uh-huh. That is weird that you brought that up, actually. I'm not into pro wrestling at all, but I caught myself watching it with my two sons a couple weeks ago. And all I kept saying was, this is fake. These guys are on steroids and growth hormones. And it's just as acrobatic as it was when I was a kid, blah, 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 blah. And my 12 and 7-year-old sons were like watching it. And they almost kept looking at me like, dude, would you shut the hell up? You're kind of ruining it for me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't have some dick sitting there while I was watching Coco Beware and Hulk Hogan be like, these guys are fake. So I was like, I should just shut up. I started tweaking with my phone or whatever. And my kids were like, once in a while, oh, and I'd look up and it would be some stunt somebody did, you know, backflip. And I thought, yeah, let them be kids, man. Stop being that guy that's like, let me explain, you know, like, you know. It's funny you brought that up.
Yeah, man. I mean, thing is, wrestling even admits it's fake now, opposed to like the 80s.
It's bigger than ever. They admitted it's fake, and now it's bigger than ever.
Yeah, they'll have podcasts on the WWE network and like specials, and they'll talk about that. They'll talk about storyline. They'll talk about like everything. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't follow it lately, it's a kind of difficult topic to talk about, but I found myself going back to that.
That's okay.
Feel like Frodis kind of like was inspired by like the early Frodis kind of had a pro wrestler bravado to it.
What?
You know,
really?
In the sense of we're the Conglomerate International, we're putting on like kind of this thing, creating like a...
Okay, okay, a all right.
You know what I mean?
You're putting and up the corporate thing, okay, all right.
Yeah, we're having like a little shtick, I guess.
Got it, okay.
That's bigger than the band, like putting on a show. You know, you're putting on like personas, a bit of a show. So, and being at shows and doing interviews at the time and staying in character, that kind of tone of voice, doing the interviews and all that. Like we were into that. And I think part of it comes from the enjoyment of pro wrestling.
What do you mean tone of voice? Now that's interesting. Here, I was about to wrap it up, but now you drag that out in the light. What do you mean tone of voice? I've never heard a Frodis interview. Were you actually kind of playing the role of something?
I think we're playing a little bit like during Conglomerate, like playing a little bit of the robotic, like we're the FCI role. Yeah.
Like what? Give me an example.
That stuff's not like recorded. It's like the 90s. It's lost. It's lost at sea. It's just how we carried ourselves. I mean, if you listen to the live Frodis Radioactivity album, it has like a 98 show of us on WMUC.
Okay.
We're just being like total freaks, like Devo meets, you know, hardcore meets the whole Conglomerate thing.
Okay.
Yeah, we just kept it going, you know? And lightheartedly, not like we're total pro wrestlers, like being super, you know, super serious, like we are the Conglomerate, but kind of keeping the theme.
That's cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, go to the first YouTube. There's like a video of our drummer, like us holding a blanket before we open for Locust. We're holding a blanket up, and our drummer is in chains. And we dropped a blanket for our intro, and he breaks the chains. We just did stupid crap like that all the time, but a lot of it was to make fun of the hardcore scene, or like just to be stupid, just
right.
Since everyone else was like, "This next song, blah, 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 let's go."
I didn't do a good enough job explaining what I was trying to say with my lyrics, so now let me do this pandering long thing before the song while they tune. Oh, shut up, dude. Just play the song. I know. I remember.
Yeah. I mean, and going about like a pro wrestling, it's like you gotta keep the momentum.
Yeah. You gotta monologue.
Yeah. Like Macho Man Randy Savage gets off, you know, he's outside the ring. He is Macho Man. That cream of the crop promo, if you look it up on YouTube, is the funniest thing ever.
Okay.
He found like some coffee creamers backstage, obviously, and just like brought them to the interview. And he's like, "Oh yeah, the cream of the cream always rises to the top. The cream of the crop." And then he's like, starts flicking these coffee creamers like sleight of hand. He keeps on pulling them out. It's so funny.
I'm gonna look that up. That's funny.
It probably I think it has like millions of views. It's like known as one of the best promos ever.
Okay.
And you can just tell. It just really feels like. He just grabbed the hand from backstage and just like winged it.
That's great.
It's so good. Incredibly good.
I guess we would be amiss if we didn't tip one to the curb for Rowdy Roddy the day that your episode's not going to be up for a while, for about a week and a half or so. But we're talking here on August 1st, and Mr. Piper just passed away yesterday. So
I follow his podcast. I listen to it like. Then I like the day before he like passed away.
Really?
Yeah, I subscribed to it. Oh, I couldn't believe it.
Wow,
he's so fun. His podcast is so good. He's so funny.
Is he? Man, I had no idea. And I should now. I'm gonna hop on with all the popular. You know, do the popular mover. Now I'm gonna go back and listen to him after he's gone. Didn't even know the man had a podcast.
Yeah, it's cool. Just talk about him talking about the old days and his opinions and like just tell all. It's fascinating.
Cool.
I mean, getting into like even reading wrestling stuff now, like the before WWE took over a lot of stuff, like the world of like wrestling territories, it's just like the punk scene. Just a bunch of dudes and vans going to different parts of the country and world that were focused on, you know, and they had their own regional things going on. They had their own Discord. It's the same. It's the same spirit.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Hey, man, almost 2 a.m. Go to bed. Thank you very much for your time, Shelby.
Thank you. Let me know when this is online and I'll also spread the word.
Yeah, do that. Spread the word. Good night, man. Stay in touch. Email me.
Will do. All right, man.
All right, brother. See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.